Hello and welcome everybody to the X-Cast, The Truth Is In Here. I'm your host, Tony Black, as ever, and once again, for the second week running, I am joined by my good friend, loaned from the bottle episode, Matt Latham.
Yes, thank you for having me. It's a, inverted commas, pleasure to be here this time.
Well, you see, you're getting the joy of going from one of the best episodes of Season 1 to one of, if not the worst episode of Season 1. So you're really covering both ends of the X spectrum, shall we say.
Yeah, I think you personally didn't want me to get cocky and say, because I got ice. Latham's going to be cocky because he got to talk about ice. Yeah, let's bring him back down to earth.
Oh, very good. Nice little pun there. Excellent. Because the episode we're talking about in this case is space.
Which is annoying because I thought you wanted me to talk about Spaced, the Channel 4 sitcom, which I was all up for. But
yeah,
you tricked me.
I'm very sorry I left the D off. Because, you know, I think everyone would be advised, really, that even if you're a fan of The X-Files, you are much better served going and watching Spaced, the Simon Pegg, Nick Frost sitcom, than watching Space, which is, and we can preface this, a load of old pants. But before that, I just wanted to ask you how your X-Files watch is going, because we were last week obviously introduced to the fact you're just exploring Season 1, so where are you up to at the time of recording?
I watched Shapes and Darkness Falls yesterday, so I'm currently up to episode 20, so I've only watched two episodes since I've last been on.
You're taking your time, though, aren't you?
I am, yes.
And it has only been a week between recording, so yeah, it's understandable. But you've only got now four episodes left before you hit the finale.
Yeah, I might get them finished by the, I'm off work this week, so I probably might finish season one.
Well, yeah, it'll be very interesting when I get your thoughts on the season finale. And yeah, but anyway, before we get there, we're going to take a look at the ninth episode of season one, Space. Not Spaced.
Why would somebody want to sabotage a space shuttle?
Well, if you were a terrorist, there probably isn't a more potent symbol of American progress and prosperity. And if you're an opponent of big science, NASA itself represents a vast money trench that exists outside the crucible and debate of the democratic process. And of course, there are those futurists who believe the space shuttle is a rusty old bucket that should be mothballed. Dinosaur spacecraft built in the 70s by scientists setting their sights on space at an ever-declining scale.
We thought we could rest easy with the fall of the Soviet Union.
Not to mention certain fringe elements who accuse our government itself of space sabotage. The failure of the Hubble telescope and the Mars Observer directly connected to a conspiracy to deny us evidence.
Evidence of what?
Alien civilization.
No, of course.
Space is the ninth episode of the first season of The X-Files. It first aired on November 12th, 1993. It was written solely by Chris Carter and directed by William Graham in the first of three directorial outings on The X-Files, two of which were in season one. And the story sees Mulder and Scully tipped off about potential sabotage in NASA, which leads them to one of Mulder's oldest heroes as a boy, and a potential mysterious alien force.
Before we begin, there's one counter that I was doing while I was watching it earlier. One is the amount of stock footage they use, and which I've kept count of.
Oh, excellent. Okay.
Okay. Do you want to guess at how many I counted?
At the outset, I'm going to go with 15.
Okay. And second one is, I've not counted this, but I've made notes about whether Mulder and Scully actually do anything to influence the plot. So at certain points, I might just cut in and say, guess what? They do bugger all.
Okay.
Which is a common theme, I shall warn you.
Yes. Well, I think we're going to get a fair gist then of what you're going to say when I ask you then. Out of 10, Matt, how would you rate Spaced? Oh, Spaced! I said Spaced! That wasn't intentional.
Spaced! Well, Spaced, I'd say, is a good 9 out of 10 series.
What about Space?
Space, in general, Space, well, it's 10 out of 10. We can't exist without space.
We can't exist without space. What about this episode, Space?
Well, it's a bit bollocks, isn't it? No, I'll give them a point for effort.
Well, that's very good.
1 out of 10.
Yeah.
They put the effort in.
You're going for 1 out of 10.
Yes.
I'm wondering if anyone will ever rate any episode of The X-Files lower than that. That's a challenge. That's a challenge. Is there anything worse than this? To be fair, it would probably be in the bottom five of the entire show. And we're talking 200 plus episodes now, aren't we? So, I can understand. Why would you only give it 1 out of 10?
Without going too much into detail about it, from what I've seen so far of the series, I don't think it's an actual X-Files episode. And by that, what I mean is, it feels as if it was a script for something else, or a story for something else that's have had Mulder and Scully kind of shoehorned into it. So it felt like it was a Twilight Zone episode. And you know what? It might have perfectly worked as a Twilight Zone or an episode of The Outer Limits, the 1990s version. In fact, it feels so much more like the 90s version of The Outer Limits than it does The X-Files, from what I've gathered so far. Because it just, as I said, let's try and find out if Mulder and Scully actually do influence the story at any point. And it's dull as fuck.
Yeah, it is. It is really boring. I think you've hit the nail on the head, really, when you say that it doesn't feel like an X-File. It feels like something else. An anthology piece as well is a good example, really. It doesn't feel like a story Mulder and Scully need to be there for. And I think when you've... obviously, again, the show is... The whole of season one, a lot of it is experimentation. It's a lot of trying different things and seeing what sticks.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they only get into their groove, really, into the second season, to be honest. But this is an example of when the show doesn't work, because it's stupid. I mean, it's just really stupid in a way that The X-Files does some mad, wacky things throughout its run. It really does. But this is just a really silly idea, and it's one of those ideas that usually in most episodes of The X-Files, there is enough on the scientific side for Scully to be able to give a reasonably good argument for why something exists or why it might exist. How is she possibly going to explain space ghosts?
I don't think she even attempts to.
No, exactly. And then
but we'll get to that.
Because we will get to that. So yeah, I think I would give it a 1.5, and I'm surprised at myself, actually, because I have already recorded the episode for Shapes at the end, which you mentioned earlier, before recording this, and I gave Shapes a higher mark, and I'm surprised, actually, because I always thought I liked this more, but it turns out I don't.
Shapes at least does have Mulder and Scully affecting a story outcome. But
yeah.
This just... Yeah.
It really doesn't. Apparently, Chris Carter wrote this episode at a particularly stressful time during September 1993 while he was launching the show and dealing with the network pressure, media, the studio, something he'd never really dealt with before.
So could you argue that this is actually a piece of metafiction in which Colonel Belt, for a good half the episode, I thought was called Marcus Bent, and I had to go back... And when Mulder calls him Belt, I thought it was an actual mistake. And I thought, hang on, I thought his name was Bent. Then I had to Google it.
Well, Marcus Bent is a British football player.
I know. that's why I thought that's. I had so many football puns I was going to say because I thought his name was Marcus Bent.
I don't know if that's just the fact the episode isn't very good at keeping your attention, or it's your classic thing about getting names wrong. I think it could be a bit of both, actually. Mm-hmm. But
anyway, the idea. Well, anyway, what was my point? Oh yes, the point being. So could you argue that this might have been, I don't know, some sort of Charlie Kaufman self-meta exploration of Chris Carter's own psyche at the time he was writing this? Because I'm pretty sure this was when, just after The X-Files started.
Yeah,
so perhaps
yeah.
The pressure of it was all... So perhaps the mysterious monster of the week is a representation of the stress that suddenly befell Chris Carter.
Well, it would explain why this is a load of rubbish, really, if it's basically therapy being written on the page.
I would accept it and no.
He said it came at a really funny time for him. I was under a tremendous amount of pressure, and here I was trying to get home at night to write. And if anything, it shows the fact that he didn't really write anything of particular substance. As well, because in the first 8 episodes, they'd used a lot of budget. This was designed, in many respects, to be, drum roll, a bottle episode of The X-Files, because they knew they could use a lot of archive footage from NASA. He said, I had all this NASA footage that was available to me pretty cheap, and I thought, well, we've been spending too much money. Here's a way to really show them that not only am I producing a good show, but I can always find ways to produce it for less. Yeah, but Chris, you produced something rubbish for less. That's the
Pull
point.
Your thumb out.
But yeah, if this, you know, you caught your podcast and your website is called The Bottle Episode. You've seen a lot of them. This is not a good bottle episode, is it?
It's nowhere near a bottle episode. It's an episode of television.
Well, thank you for that erudite summation. There was apparently a lot of last-minute changes. The actress Susanna Thompson, who played Michelle Jenneroux, said that I think some of this might have had to do with what they were and what they were not allowed to show in terms of NASA. I remember reading later that Chris Carter wanted to show some of the actual events in the shuttle and NASA wouldn't let him. So potentially there was stuff written that was a little bit more in-depth in terms of the shuttle crew and what was going on in the shuttle. But I don't know how much that would have added, really, because it wasn't about those guys, was it? Really, it was about Belt, really, ultimately. I nearly said Bent then. You've got this now. You put this in my head.
Oh, no, I think the story. I think there must be a better X-Files story surrounding Marcus Bent.
Or Colonel Belt.
Yes. No, actually, the footballer.
The
Marcus
footballer,
Bent.
Marcus Bent.
Yeah.
I think there's a better episode potentially involving NASA. And they never used NASA again.
I can see why.
Well, you can see why. But I think I actually think the concept of astronauts seeing things in space, while it's difficult to do on a show like The X-Files because it's very Earth-based and it would suit better something like, I don't know, a Battlestar Galactica kind of show out in space. It's an interesting concept about the after effects of an encounter with something up there, but this is just not an effective way to do it at all. And you can tell that there was a lot of, from what obviously the research and about the backstory, there's a lot of things that didn't really go work, and it was a difficult one to put together. And that I think that becomes apparent at the very beginning. If we go into some depth, it becomes apparent in the teaser, which immediately is just, I thought just really cheesy, with a news report that, you know, it gives us loads of exposition about the face of Mars, which is a real life thing. It's a real life, it was a real life mystery, wasn't it? I think it's been debunked since this now as being just rock formations, but it does look like a face, and a lot of people are going, oh, does that mean alien intelligence on Mars? No.
I just refer to it as as ghost face.
Yeah.
It's like Ghostface from Scream, just like after a few pints.
Yeah. It does actually, yeah.
You want to watch a scary movie?
Yeah. It's not anything. It's just a trick of the light or whatever. But, you know, for years it cropped up in mysterious articles. Ooh, is it this? So you can understand why he would use it potentially as a jumping off point.
There's the first use of stock footage as well in that 1977. Flashback.
Right, so that's one. Okay, so that's one use. So we're going to count these as we go. So that's one stock footage. So yeah, you've got the interview introducing Belt. I do like the strain of music that Mark Snow uses for when we see the space ghost thing. You know, it's kind of this sort of escalating sort of straight
space
string.
Ghost,
yeah.
Coast to coast.
It's just good. It really kind of cranks up the weirdness of it. You know, even in bad episodes, Mark Snow is good at putting music in that's better than it, really. But even that struggles to emphasise, you know, to make better the face attack, as I would call it, when Belt's in bed. Yeah, it's one of those teasers that's, it tells you what you need to know. It introduces the main guy in it, and then you have a bit of alien weirdness or a bit of weirdness, and it's just really, it's just poorly done, really. And then as soon as we get after the credits,
more stock footage.
I was going to say that. So that's two. Okay, yeah. Stock footage. Immediate stock footage overload. Really.
Yeah.
And then you've got Mulder and Scully introduced because they're approached by Michelle, who's the communications commander for NASA. And she obviously brings them the information that somebody's been potentially sabotaging the launch. Attempts, and that there was the liftoff that we see at the beginning was aborted, and she needs their help.
Yeah, I didn't realise that the actress who plays it, Susanna Thompson, is actually Moira McQueen from Arrow.
Yes, she
I
is.
I only noticed
it
the second time. In my notes, I just refer to her as Moira for the rest of the episode.
I've seen some of Arrow, and I did think of her. Yeah, in that year.
Yeah, but interestingly enough, I don't know if you noticed this, but I certainly did. In that scene, you've got Mulder and Scully talking, and then Susanna Thompson comes in. The ADR, which is the additional dialogue recording, you can tell it's actually, it seems so out of sync with her mouth.
It does.
Mulder and Scully are fine. So Duchovny and Anderson have got okay. It's just that the Susanna Thompson's ADR for that scene is so, it looks really bad.
Yeah, it does.
So I'm wondering whether it was rushed, because I thought it was my DVD, because I was watching it through my computer. I put the DVD in my computer, and I had to mess around with my audio sync settings in the software I use. But because I thought it was that at first, but no.
No, it's poor. Yeah, it's the same for me. Poor ADR. No, I you're right. And it's very, it's just another example of how, yeah, this episode was made on the cheap, and they were trying to presumably rush through it and things like that. And the big question I had was, who gave Michelle their names? Because she says, the person I talked to said your unexplained phenomena is your thing. And that's never followed up on. You know, who gave her the names of Mulder and Scully?
It's a conspiracy.
It's not a big deal, but it's just a little plot thing that isn't really explained. But it gets Mulder and Scully to where they need to be. You know, and credit where credit's due to some extent, because it's not about them, you know, investigating a death. You know, and I think this might be, or a kidnapping or something. This is the first example, I think, of a story where, they're not investigating a weird death or somebody going missing or something like that. So, you know, and so credit in that sense. But on the other hand, it's just a bit immediately quite dull. Oh, it's an aborted space launch. Okay.
Yeah, we think that these obvious sabotage is going to be very creepy. So instead of going to the proper authorities, who probably have control over NASA, we're going to go to some kook at the FBI.
Well, yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't make much sense.
Which, actually, I'll bring this up now, actually, because does the FBI have jurisdiction over NASA?
I would be surprised.
There's bits later on where, well, he doesn't actually do anything, but Mulder says, I want this, this, and this, and this, and this kind of stuff. And I'm just wondering whether Mulder actually could do that.
Well, maybe thinking about it, because NASA isn't a law enforcement agency, is it? So in theory, it might not be as easy as him telling people what to do. It could be that they have to go to the courts and get subpoenas and things like that, I would imagine, because they are a big organisation. But I don't know if they're privately funded or they're actually funded by the US government. And I'd imagine they're part of the US government. They're like an authority. And it's because if they were privately contracted, well, I don't know. I really don't know. And certainly not at this point. That's an interesting question, actually.
If anyone knows, please
let us know. No, genuinely, because that is quite interesting.
It'd be interesting how much jurisdiction the FBI does have. So, because I'm thinking this might be a question that I might end up asking myself more than once, about how much power does Mulder and Scully have over private companies or other government agencies, etc., etc.
For the purposes of the story, half the time, they don't have any power, you know, and they're constantly being undermined and things like that. But I think the main one is that they have jurisdiction over a lot of law enforcement, really, in other places, like, you know, local cops and things like that. They can usually go in there and say, right, well, we're taking over now, which is why they piss so many people off during the run of the show. But but yeah, it's interesting. But it gets us into NASA anyway, into Houston. And I do like, and when Mulder and Scully go and meet Colonel Belt, I like the fact that Mulder is a fanboy. It's a nice little thing, you know, because given his interest,
it
in aliens.
It doesn't look any different from his 1977 appearance, apart from, I don't know, did he take a wig off?
he doesn't look any older, does he? His hairline's receded slightly, I think.
Yeah.
And that's it. But I think the fact that Mulder is a fanboy about this makes sense to me, because of his interest in aliens and things like that. You can just imagine him being one of the kids who would, you know, watch Star Trek when it was on TV and, you know, loved all the space shuttle launch things when he was a kid. So to have him meet one of his heroes, I think that was a nice little touch that they didn't necessarily need to add.
Yeah, I think part of me, though, thinks he might know more. He should have perhaps known more about how NASA works, and it's particularly the technology of the space shuttles. I mean, there's occasional bits where he explains to the audience and Scully.
Well, yeah,
what's happening? I translate stuff. But yeah. I would have thought that he'd probably known a bit more about the technical aspects of stuff. From the sound of it, Mulder was like a massive hero, fan of astronauts and the space program in general. I would have thought he might have had a better idea of perhaps the hardware side of things, because he does fanboy like Tony Black going to the UFO museum in Roswell.
Yes, that's a little story in that 6 years ago, Latham and I and two of our friends went on a road trip across the States. And we decided to go, we were in Texas, so we decided, because we were on our way to Los Angeles, and we decided to go through Roswell, up through New Mexico, through Roswell. And I was, you know, very disappointed to find, and no offence if anyone's listening from Roswell, but I was very, very disappointed to find almost nothing there except a junk shop with a 10-foot Jar Jar Binks, which still freaks me out when I think about it.
Was Jar Jar Binks wearing Nazi uniform?
Yeah, because there was lots of Nazi memorabilia as well, which was really weird. And our friend Waylon was extremely excited by it all, which was, again, weird, because he's from Oklahoma. and then they've got a UFO museum. And I did spend most of it walking around, getting very excited about all the reports of like MJ-12 and Project Blue Book and all lots of things that get mentioned in the X-Files, because I grew up watching the X-Files and reading constantly about UFO conspiracies and things like that. I used to love all that. I still do, really. And it's covered in that stuff. And there's quite a bit of X-Files memorabilia in there as well, actually. Lots of posters and things like that. So, and I would imagine after Series 10, there's been even more stuff in there for it. So,
yeah.
if you're ever in Roswell, and you know, go to that UFO museum. I would imagine it's where they make most of their income trade, actually.
Yeah.
And it's their tourist thing. So go and support that. But yes, I was geeking out. Maybe not as much as Mulder, but I was geeking out a lot. Yeah. Yeah. So you know, he's there and he meets, and Belt is very much the thing is, Belt obviously is turning around and going, "There's no problem. The shuttle's going to launch. There's no issues."
Bug off.
We all know it's Belt. I mean, this is the thing. If we didn't see that thing going into his face in the teaser, there might have been more enigma about this. You might have thought, oh, is Michelle actually up to something? Or is there somebody else in NASA? Does it link to the conspiracy? Blah, blah, blah. No, it's obviously Belt because he's possessed by something, right? So all the way through, you're going, when are we going to find out what it's Belt? You know?
Yeah.
don't we?
He did it. He's done it.
It's obviously Belt.
It's him. It's him, Mulder, Scully, it's him. No, it's him.
Yeah.
No, don't look away, it's him.
It's him.
Yeah.
So, you know, and obviously the shuttle does launch, it's fine. And, you know, so everything seems to be okay. And Mulder's reaction with the shuttle launch, he just does a double thumbs up with a big grin. I quite like that.
Was it before then where there's an appearance by one of the NASA engineers and it's an actor called Tom McBeath?
Right.
He's one of those people who's in everything. Or am I jumping the gun?
No, I think I know what you mean. He's the guy, when she comes in later and she's cut her head, and he asks her, "What, are you all right?" That guy.
No. It's not him.
Who?
No.
Okay.
This is a guy who I know as Mayborn from SG-1. He's only in it for split seconds.
Oh, yes, I know. Yes, because I used to watch SG-1. Oh, yeah. Yes, I know. Yeah, I know you.
He's been in everything. He's like Mark Shepard and Roger R. Cross, one of those serial guest stars.
He's the guy who tells them that points out the stuff with the engines, doesn't he, and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, oh, I don't know him. And then it just, like, his IMDb page kind of, like, just keeps on loading.
So, yeah, you know, it all launches and they...
Stock footage again.
Okay, number three. That's three. I'm right here, okay. Three stock footage. And they're driving to reach mission control once contact is lost with the shuttle, because things start to go immediately fairly quickly wrong. And then this is the bit where Michelle has a car crash, which is just really shit.
They've made a car crash out of filming a car crash.
Yeah. It's just so poorly directed, you know, literally just a case of fog in the rain, and then suddenly lots of shaky cameras, and it's like slow motion camera that's just been shaken a bit, and then, oh, car tipped over. It's just really poor.
Because I've been binge-watching Smallville, and whenever there's a car, well, there's a lot of cars and trucks that go flying over the place and flip over. Whenever they do something like that, they always, and I mean always, show the car/truck flipping over.
Mm.
So it's when it doesn't actually happen and they try and do tricks to try and show they haven't got the money to do it, I've noticed it a few times since I've been rewatching Smallville from the start.
Yeah.
Like, they just seem to try and write or direct their way around not showing a car flipping over. But this is just really bad, where you just see a bit of blurry light and then the car on its back.
It's rubbish. It's even with little money, there has to be a better way of doing it, you know.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just have her driving, veers off, slams into something, and cut to black. You know, that could even be more effective. It's just not that. It was just rubbish. Obviously, she's now seen the face, though, hasn't she? She's seen the face coming at her.
Mm-hmm.
But what I don't understand that, though. I mean, what was that about? Because what's that trying to do? Can you understand why that happens, actually, thinking about it?
What, in relation to the rest of the episode?
Yeah.
Because where did it come from? I mean, we see later on that it apparently vanishes from what's-his-face's, Marcus Bent's body.
But it doesn't, though, does it? Because that's the other thing I was going to say. When it does float up and it starts harassing the shuttle, it's mm-hmm. still inside him at the same time, because he still ends up having all the at the end. So how many of these things are there? You know,
exactly. And why do they want to, I don't know, make cars crash?
Yeah. And what does it serve killing Michelle?
Yeah.
I don't get that, because the same thing is going to happen anyway. They're still going to try and get the shuttle down, whether she's there or not. Somebody else will just take her place.
Yeah, Mulder and Scully actually get her out of the car, but then, is that them influencing the plot? No, because when they go back, she does bugger all there anyway. It's Belt.
Yeah.
Bolt. It's Usain Bolt comes in and actually talks down and manages to...
So we've got Marcus Bent and Usain Bolt. Any more sports people we can get in here? I have to think about this. But
it would have been a much more interesting episode, Marcus Bent and Bolt.
Crime fighting duo.
NASA investigation.
I now want to see a Bent and Bolt. I want to see that show where Marcus Bent and Usain Bolt solve crimes. I'd watch
just,
that.
Or investigate, or like NASA internal affairs.
Yeah.
NASA IA.
Yeah, they do a lot of running in the episodes. Yeah. The fact we've gone here proves that this episode is boring. Yeah. We're bored talking about it, so we're starting to invent things.
I'm pretty sure people are probably expecting to be bored listening to this podcast talking about this episode, so we need to keep them entertained.
Yeah, this is the most boring the X-Cast will ever be. Okay, all right, I can promise this is why we're doing this.
That's probably why I'm here, because we just know we're going to go on some random tangent.
Exactly. Yeah.
Usain and Ball. Bolt and Bent, National Treasure.
So you go. So yeah, you know, Michelle goes back to the control room with a cut on her head, and the shuttle's in danger. And you get lots of, obviously because it's a bottle episode, you got lots of scenes inside the control room with lots of techno babble dialogue, which Mulder's then trying to explain to Scully, because we're not understanding it. So Scully's there going, well, what's that mean? What does that mean? What's this? And he's like, blah, 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 blah.
Who's president?
Yeah, yeah. And all they do is stand around as Mulder explains what's going on for us, really. That's all it is.
Does Michelle actually do anything at that point anyway? So, is it because Belt comes in and does whatever the hell he does that's controversial, and she just stands there giving him a death stare? I mean, Mulder and Scully took her out of the car, but if Mulder and Scully weren't there, Belt would have come down and done what he would have done anyway.
Well, exactly, yeah. It doesn't make any difference.
So Mulder and Scully don't advance the narrative.
There you go.
That's another point.
The thing is, it's like, there's a lots of... Chris Carter tries lots of things to try and inject some stakes into the plot. The first thing you've got is the fact that there's a countdown, you know, that they've only got like a day or whatever to deliver this payload, and the astronauts are in danger and everything.
What is
like
the
that.
Payload?
I don't know. They don't think they say what the payload is. It's just the payload. It could be a load of rice. You know, who knows, right? I don't know what the payload is.
Millions of dollars for rice.
Well, and that was the other thing. Would Congress really shut down the whole of NASA? I mean, you're talking about a multi-billion dollar organisation, right?
Yeah.
I mean, one of the big things that Chris Carter tries to do in this episode is layer in this idea that the space program's dying off and that people aren't interested in astronauts anymore. You know, Belt says at one point, the only time we ever get on the front pages is when someone dies. You know, and that's not a bad sense of commentary, because there is an element of truth in that. Mm-hmm. After all the space missions in the 60s and 70s, interest started to wane, you know, when... You know, you had space disasters happen, so people started saying, well, do we need to send people up there? Then technology developed robots and probes that could do it all. So, you know, we're at the point now where you only occasionally get something massive in the news, like when they put a robot on a comet or something, like, or they, you know, and even then it's not the same as you would have had in 1969 when Neil Armstrong walks on the moon. It's so there is an interesting stuff there. There is an interesting commentary, but it just feels like, well, I see what you're trying to do, but the stakes, you're trying to inject all this drama and all these stakes. And I'm sorry, I don't think Congress would shut down the entirety of NASA because you haven't delivered rice. We are assuming it's rice.
Congress have got all this korma and naan bread, and we've got no rice.
But I've got
this image now of, like, all Congress just sitting there with, like, just tapping the fingers like forks, right? With, like, bowls of, like, I don't know, chicken teriyaki or something. And, like, goes, God damn it, where's my rice?
Yeah.
It's NASA's fault. We should have just imported it from, I don't know, Riceland, wherever it's from.
They didn't deliver the payload. Let's shut them down. I just don't really believe it.
Mr. President, maybe we should have just, like, called a takeaway. Don't tell me what to do. I'm the president, damn it.
Yeah, there's just lots of that. And then, you know, they try and get them to inject some actual immediate drama. They then have to try and do this uplink in order to, you know, get the astronauts to rotate the craft. So they have to go into one of the server rooms in the mission control, and they try and inject stakes, and they pull their guns out, and they're like, who's here? And then it just turns out to be a little podgy guy in glasses, you know, who's in the shadows going, don't hurt me! I didn't get any of that. I was like, what does this mean? What's the point of this? He's just a little fat bloke with glasses, right? And that's it. And then it just ends.
Yeah. Yeah, but then this is when you get Mulder saying, I want a SWAT team the size of Canada and a Fez and that kind of...
Yeah.
He starts barking orders, which doesn't actually happen.
Were they trying to suggest that little fat guy was the saboteur? Because everybody knows it's Belt. This is the thing. We all know it's Belt. There's no drama because it's obvious. this is the problem.
Yeah.
And you just think, this is just wasting time, you know. And it's just trying to inject drama into a story where there is no drama. So you're at the point where now that the shuttle's in trouble, the Belt goes home, and then the space ghost comes out of him and floats up to the shuttle.
And we've got stock footage used number 4 and 5 here.
Oh, right, okay, 5.
Yeah, so so you see, I think that's when I think you see the space, and then you actually see the flashbacks of his spacewalk.
Yeah.
That's the 5th use.
So you've got the flashbacks to him encountering the space ghost when he was first up there. And then, as we say, it flies out of him, although it's not all gone out of him because it's still in there. So, you know, the space ghost has gone up there to try and harass the shuttle crew. And I just kept thinking, well, why has this thing just been waiting for like, years? And actually, what it does do is, I think, something that's incredibly insensitive, because it actually suggests that Belt sabotaged the Challenger. It suggests later on that Belt sabotages the Challenger, which is the real craft that exploded in 1986 and killed, like, however many astronauts.
Yeah, I remember when I first watched it, that was the point I started fast-forwarding through the episode.
Yeah.
Because you've got people that write, or in fiction, people have wrote in real-life tragedies or set stuff into real-life stuff all the time. The latest one is people that surround things around 9/11. And I think the Challenger, okay, it's not the same extent as the amount of the tragedy of 9/11, but it was still a very key, still like a black mark in US history.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's quite, and it's one of those things that people still see as bad taste if you don't treat it right.
Yeah.
And that's like saying the Belt was responsible for 9/11 and... Or that he secretly was Jim Jones as well. I mean, it's just one of those things. It just feels very insensitive, and I can see why they might have done it, but what you could have done is just a throwaway line of aborted projects that perhaps didn't launch.
Mm.
So, like, I don't know, like saying, well, goes back for loads of different things, or like a throwaway line saying, hang on, what's all these? Those are launches that never happened. Because why? Because Belt said that this was happening and this was happening.
Yeah. No, exactly. And it's the whole thing of, you know, by using a real life tragedy, I mean, they're effectively saying, oh, an alien possessed someone and blow up the Challenger. I mean, that's really, really insensitive for something that actually did happen and kill a lot of people.
I mean, when was the Challenger disaster?
It was, was 86.
So it was what? Seven, eight years, which is still quite fresh in the mind,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's closer to that than we are to it now, anyway, from when the episode aired. But it's still, so it might still be fresh in a few people's minds, and it just, yeah, that there was something about that that just didn't sit right with me.
Well, I think what they were trying to do was the suggestion, because as I said, you know, it's been in belt for like 15, 16 years, right, since he did his spacewalk. It's been obviously with him, and then there's the suggestion that, you know, if Belt sabotaged the Challenger, for years he's been covertly sabotaging NASA projects that have been trying to get people back into space, because whatever this thing is, it doesn't want us in space. It wants us to stay where we are. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like saying, no, don't come any further, you know, this is mine. And that's the inference, even though obviously the space ghost is never characterised because he's just like a force, but... Just to, like I say, just to use something real. Like you said, it should have been just a previous missions would have been fine, absolutely fine. I think that they thought it wouldn't carry the same impact, you know, if you didn't say Challenger. But I just think it's really in poor taste, really.
Yes, exactly.
It's a shame. But it just feels like a weird motivation, you know, for what the space ghost is doing. And, you know, it just manages to mainly to get up there. So you've got a scene where the astronauts are going, there's a ghost outside the ship, you know.
There's a bit where one of the employees runs across and goes up those stairs that we've seen a few other characters run up. I'm just wondering whether they was able to get that moment for like 15 minutes and just filmed De Cockney, Anderson, Thompson and a bunch of extras running up and down, which made me think whether NASA have actually got a leaderboard and they time people who can run from the control centre all the way across the forecourt, up those steps to wherever they go, and whether there's a leaderboard saying, oh look, Brian's done it in 15 seconds. Because the amount of times we've seen people run up that steps.
They ought to do that if they don't.
Yeah.
There's again, though, just before it and as it's going up into space, there's again like attempts to get more drama. You know, Mulder and Scully actually, they kind of do something in that they go looking for Belt, but they don't have to do much to find him. They just turn up at his house and he's there, and then they take him back. So there's nothing, you know, they don't go on a big mystery quest to find him anywhere.
It was halfway at the door anyway. He was just putting his tie on.
Yeah, exactly.
So he would have been there anyway. So
yeah. So they do nothing to influence anything. And then there's a conversation between Belt and Michelle in which he accuses her of letting personal judgment get in the way of her job. And, you know, it's a bit hypocritical because obviously everything's quite personal to him with this. But, you know, I suppose because she's got her, it's her like husband or a fiance who's up in the shuttle, isn't it?
Yeah.
So she's got an extra reason to want to get them down.
Are you suggesting there's no narrative cohesion in terms of Marcus Belt's motivations?
Well, quite possibly. I know, it's terrible of me, but, you know, who knew? So you've got that attempt at drama, and then you've got all the riveting scene where they're filing through lots of previous... This is where Mulder turns around and goes, look, I want information on the Challenger, on the face of Mars, on this and that. And then they're looking, there's lots of cut moments that William Graham puts in where they're looking at files. I was thinking, my God, is this what drama's supposed to be?
Speed reading. Mulder and Scully go speed reading.
God, it was just rubbish, you know. And you're,
I mean,
just
like I mean, Scully in her, one of her few lines of dialogue says like, "It's like looking at a needle in a haystack." Oh, we found the needle.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah.
She didn't find the needle. She didn't find a needle. Just found the very insensitive forcing of history, which is just one example of a sabotage, and that suddenly changes everything. I mean, what?
You made a good point there, actually, that Scully doesn't do a lot. She doesn't say a lot, does she? In this, actually.
No, I mean, like, okay, it's something I noticed particularly in the first half of the first season, where they perhaps didn't know how to balance the duo anyway, because Scully's always, he's like always the sidekick to Mulder for most of it, rather than an actual team. But this is perhaps one of the episodes where it really shows they didn't know what to do with Scully or how to make any sort of sceptical judgments. Because I don't think because usually there's like, I think every episode apart from this one so far usually has Scully saying, well, no, it could be this, this, and this, and this. Whereas Mulder's like, I think it's aliens, and Scully just rolls her eyes.
Yeah.
Rather than trying to state a case or anything. And yeah, she just finds the Challenger information and that's it.
Yeah. In this case, it's just like she's keeping up with everything, you know, in that
yeah.
she's out, Mulder's explaining everything. It's yeah, that's all it really is for Scully. So she gets hardly anything to do. But so, you know, as it's going on and the astronauts are in danger, there's not much time, there's an oxygen leak, there's a ghost outside the ship.
Stock footage number six. what it does, it looks like someone's actually smudged the film stock over yeah. where the exhaust is. So instead of like some sort of space ghost, it looks like someone's actually accidentally scratched the film with their thumb.
Yeah. It's just poor. So number six. And so now you've got Belt being overcome by the alien thing, and then he collapses.
Oh, no.
And then he collapses in his office. He's like, oh, it's there. Ah. And there's some interesting information. Susanna Thompson, when she was there when they were filming the scene where Belt is in his office and he wakes and he sees the face of Marsh. She says, one of my favourite memories was watching Billy Graham, the director, guide Ed Lauter, who played Belt, through the scene. He stood off to one side on the set and verbally guided Ed through the whole thing. Okay, Ed, you're sleeping and it's uneasy. You're tossing and turning. And Ed's doing all this as Billy's telling him, and now you wake up and Mars face! And she says,
Mars face!
Yeah, and she says, of course, there was no Mars face there. It was just Ed reacting to a pretend circumstance in his own imagination. But I found it very interesting to watch that whole exercise as it unfolded. Mars face! That's a hashtag.
Stop, Mars face. That's like Hammer Time. Yeah. X-Files version of Hammer Time. Stop, Mars face. Boom,
boom, boom. Mars face. Boom, 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 boom. It's, yeah.
On a related note to rap music, when I called the Mars space ghost Ghostface, there is a rapper called Ghostface Killer.
Yes, so there is.
So maybe this is actually Ghostface Killer trying to stop the space launch.
I wish that had been the twist at the end. That would have been much, much more interesting than whatever this thing is. So, yeah, Belt collapses and then, you know, he's saying, it's out there, there's something there. And then Mulder does one of the weirdest things I think I've ever seen him do when he does the focus.
I think it hypnotises
him. Yeah, focus on my finger. It felt a little bit like, you know, what's his name at A Little Britain? 3, 2, 1, you're under.
Is it Kenny?
Yeah.
Look around the eyes.
Look around the eyes. Not into the eyes, not around the eyes. Yeah. It was just ridiculous. I thought, where's he learned this? This looks like there's something, some kind of thing that, you know, David Carradine would have done in Kung Fu. You know, it's very like, focus.
I think what it is, I don't know whether Chris Carter realised that, oh crap, I've got to get Mulder to do something. And then
weird
basically hypnotises Marcus Belt, right, in perhaps the quickest hypnosis ever.
Yeah.
Where people are saying, he's dying, you're killing him, Mulder. Tell us what's going to happen. It gives him information that has no bearing on how the plot happens anyway.
Yeah.
It's context and exposition. That's all it is.
Yeah. It's only later when Belt actually gives them something useful, when he says, change the trajectory to 35 degrees, and that kind of thing. And, right. And I just like, I did think to myself, why would anyone listen to him? Why would you listen to somebody who has basically just, like, apparently been possessed by an alien space ghost and then has been sabotaging your shuttles for 20 years? Why would you suddenly go, change it, do what he says?
The thing is, though, it's even... Okay, the argument where the only thing that... This is the murky area, the murky grey area of whether Mulder actually does anything to further the plot, which is carry information, which is tell him trajectory. From all that Moira McQueen knows, and this FBI agent's telling her to do something that she knows will probably destroy and kill her fiancé, or partner, or whatever... is up there, and she doesn't eat. But then she doesn't even question it. Mulder doesn't actually appeal to her or
no.
Do. Oh, if this was a Quantum Leap episode, you'd have Sam Beckett in the Mulder character saying, giving some speech about the true honest nature of Belt. He's always been in there, even though he might have been possessed by an even evil alien ghost.
Yeah,
But there would have been some kind of, I don't know, like a 3-minute speech from Scott Bakula. Saying that Marcus Belt is a good man inside, and that you know him really, Rob, as the hero he should be, and blah blah blah. Nope, it's just like this strange FBI agent who's done bugger all, apart from pull me out of the car, says I need to do this thing because some strange mad guy told him to. Yeah, I'll do it. And it worked.
I just didn't buy it at all. You know, I was like, I thought, well, no, you wouldn't do it. You wouldn't just do it without any kind of convincing. Especially not after everything that you've just found out about what he's been doing for 20 years nearly. You know, yeah. And the fact that apparently he was the one who blew up the Challenger. You wouldn't just go, oh yeah, okay, let's do what he says. Fucking hell! You know,
yeah, I mean, like, okay, and I'm pretty sure that Michelle has probably got more experience than Mulder anyway. So, because So she goes, no, we can't do that. We'll just do this and this. Mulder doesn't even actually say it twice. She just does it.
Mm. Yeah.
She just does it there and then, which it's mind-boggling.
It is, actually. It's so stupid. In terms of the writing, and it just, after everything that you've seen and you've done throughout this episode, it's just for the convenience of plot to get those astronauts back safely on the ground, you know, and there to be a happy ending in inverted commas. Although, you know, a bittersweet ending, given Belt decides to do himself in because he can't live with it anymore in what has to be the most unintentionally hilarious suicide I've ever watched in my life.
Yes.
Oh!
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure stock footage is used there again.
Right, is that seven?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. When he's flashing, he's flashing. Well, not his life, but his space life is flashing before his eyes before he dies.
Well, or basically, NASA stock footage is flashing before he dies.
That's a shit way to die, isn't it? Stock footage. You don't even get your own memories. Just stock footage.
Yeah, it's like when like characters remember something and it's not in first person. It's just clips from previous episodes.
Yeah.
That they weren't even in.
It was just really, really bad. It was so badly done. You know, just jumps, slow motion, crashes out of the window, and then he falls into the ground, and you just get an ah. You know, and why would that even kill the space ghost anyway? You know, they say, oh, we think it. You know, took it with him. How do you know that? You don't know what the fuck that thing is.
No, if it can get out of his body when he's alive.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, like, hey, the.
Exactly. Who's to say it didn't just go into Michelle, or it didn't just go into somebody else, you know? Yeah. Or it didn't. I mean, I give up. I don't. It's so stupid. You know, it really is. It's just to add that sort of sad ending, and so Mulder can say, "Oh well, you know, he wasn't a bad guy. He did try and help, and he was, you know, he was a true American hero still, and whatnot." Yeah, but
and Congress never got their rice.
Yeah, you know, Congress never got the rice. And let's just forget that he may have blew the Challenger up. It's fine, right? You know, it's just.
Oh God! You know what? You know, I just completely forgot about that because like, it ends with him being seen as a hero.
Yeah,
and like as a like a I don't know like a NASA funeral or something.
Yeah, like a military honours.
Yeah, like what did he really do? Just kill himself to save the world from ugly alien selfies.
Yeah, and and also, who on earth would have believed that he was possessed by an alien space ghost? Nobody except Mulder, right? So that assumes that everyone didn't think it was him who'd done any of this. And that, well, of course they would have done. They would have just thought he was basically a terrorist, effectively. They wouldn't have buried him with military honours because he blew up the Challenger and he sabotaged all these missions. And you can bet your bottom dollar they all didn't go, oh, it was that space ghost that did it, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous.
And it kind of, the ending shot where it pans across the flag of the United States of America.
Mm.
Ends on the stars and the stars and stripes. It ends on the stars because he's an astronaut. Get it? Mm. He's an astronaut, so we're going to have stars on the American flag.
Supple.
We've just said he's just killed a bunch of astronauts in one of America's most like disheartening, space disasters. But you know what? Let's salute him anyway.
Just stupid. Well, at least we're not on our own. Chris Carter said it was the worst episode of the first season.
I wonder if he lost a bet.
Maybe he was trying to sabotage his own show at this point. He said, it's not my favourite episode and I think our least successful. I still think it wasn't a bad story. I just think it wasn't realised in the proper way. And do you know what? I kind of would agree with that, actually. I think there is a potentially better story. I think I'd get rid of the space ghost idea, but I like the idea of an astronaut encountering something in space that then affects him on Earth. That's interesting. That is interesting. And that is potentially more of an interesting X-File, but it just was completely done in completely the wrong way.
Do you know what? What might have raised it to 2 out of 10 is that if you just take out all of the ghost face effects and you just have Belt just acting stupid,
mm.
that raises the mystery yeah. a bit. I mean, like, because technically that, because like there's a room full of people that react to that ghost face that Mulder looks at, Michelle yeah. looks at, even Scully can't be,
yeah.
not see that. But she doesn't comment on it because, you know, it's Scully.
Wouldn't you have loved it, though, if it cut to Scully reading a book at that point? And then she looks up and goes, what? What was that? Yeah. I was reading, yeah, sorry.
Sorry, I was admiring the wallpaper.
Exactly, but...
or yeah. she was just looking at the desk and noticed a massive order from Congress saying, yeah, we'll have, like, 54 gallons of tandoori.
Yeah, where's that rice, damn it? Although they do get the payload in the end, so they would have been happy with their massive
rice
payload.
Congress won't starve. I wonder if that's the whole reason for the conspiracy on X-Files now. I want to go and watch every other episode and just wonder whether it's actually to do with Congress wanting some rice with their curry.
I think that would be the best reveal ever. You know, it's been ludicrous enough that it wouldn't be a big stretch, actually. But no, I agree with you. I think if they'd have made it much more of an internalised kind of struggle, you could have even just had the very ending of the episode be that it leaves him, and then you see something weird. And then, then you go, oh, what the fuck was that? And all through the episode, it's been very dubious as to whether he's just insane and he's a terrorist or he's possessed. That would have been definitely much better. It would have been much more of an internal thing. I completely agree with you. But stupid is as space does. That was space. If there's one episode, again, if there's one episode never to recommend to anybody, it's probably this one. Avoid at all costs.
And I think I've mentioned in the previous episode that my favourite series of all time is Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And there's a couple of episodes that if I ever rewatch it, there are some that I will skip. There's only about two or three I will skip. And this was worse than any of them.
Yeah. No, yeah. I would happily admit, The X-Files being my version of your Buffy, I would happily admit that this is rubbish. And when the creator of the show even admits it's rubbish, you know, there's no, you know, that's it. It is rubbish. Just avoid it. So let's move on. And I'm going to ask you, as I ask every guest every week, about the specific paranormality in the episode. So, Latham, do you believe in space ghosts?
That would technically mean, do I believe in ghosts in general? And whether I believe in the existence of a soul and whether aliens have souls.
You've put words in my mouth there. I said space ghosts. How do you know that a space ghost is the same as a ghost?
It's got the word ghost in it.
True.
But if it's not a ghost, but then what we don't know is whether it's actually ghosts, because the name ghost means that it's a deceased, it's the soul of a deceased living thing. Because I think it's mainly because the episode's so vague in what it's supposed to be about. There's a difference between whether by space ghost you mean if it's a deceased alien that has a soul, in which case, don't believe in that.
No. I'm not... You sounded like you should. I don't.
Yeah, sorry.
You don't believe in alien ghosts? What is wrong with you, Latham?
Or alien souls, or the soul in general?
Well, I'll tell you a better question, actually. Do you believe that astronauts have seen aliens? Because this is the ultimate thing about the underpinning of the episode. You know, there have been reports over the years that people, you know, on different spacewalks and whatnot, might have seen things or whatever. Do you ever believe that any of them may have seen stuff out there or on the moon or up there?
I think last week or last episode I was on, I mentioned that I don't believe in intelligent alien life.
Mm, yes.
But I do believe that there's perhaps lower form, well, not lower forms, but other forms of life in terms of plant life that we haven't found yet.
Mm.
So when you ask me if they've seen anything, I don't believe that, because space is probably quite an isolated and quite lonely thing, and the psychological impact is probably something that only people that have been in space can fully understand. And we know that perhaps when you're on your own or you're alone, that your mind can play tricks on you and you see things, and reports of stuff like that. I personally think, unless alien ghosts or I don't know, passing alien ships, like aliens taking selfies with like the Earth satellites or whatever. But I think it might just be a side effect of perhaps astronauts being in space too long, or because I'll be quite surprised if there's reports of astronauts saying they've seen things or witnessed things being actually true.
Mm.
Because there would be other evidence to back it up, unless there is shady government suits that come to them. But I'm much more of the explanation that things like that are perhaps just tricks of the mind more than anything.
Yeah, probably. It's to do with, you know, like you say, isolation and being out there and seeing what you want to see.
I'm definitely a more Scully kind of person, I think.
Yeah. I think most people are, really, though. When you boil it down, I think, you know, unless you've got a strong belief in aliens or various different things, most people would err on Scully's side and say, well, sounds a bit daft, you know. And whether or not we'll be proven, you know, in the future centuries, wrong, and that all these things do exist and we just haven't reached that point in our understanding yet, who knows? Mm-hmm. We will be long pushing up daisies. Unfortunately, and we'll be just up there, well, hopefully up there, chewing on some pipe or whatever.
Yeah, haunting astronauts with no apparent motive whatsoever.
Yeah.
Maybe the space ghost is just drunk and goes, let me in!
Could be.
I need the load.
Would explain a lot. So we're going to move on to the X quiz, finally, and five questions and a quote on space. And, yeah, are you ready to be tested, Matt?
Go on, then.
Okay. Question one. What year does the opening news report featuring Belt take place?
1977.
Well done. 1977. Excellent. Yes. Good one. Question two. How old was Mulder when he stayed up all night to watch Belt's spacewalk?
14.
Well done. You did very well here.
Oh, God, I really hope I don't break the record for this.
Oh, I hope you do. Oh, dear. There's one question I know you're going to get because...
Oh, yeah. God.
When Mulder's giving his commands out and he's talking about what information he wants from the files in NASA, he mentions that he wants information on the Challenger disaster. He wants information on the face of Mars, but what other thing does he want information on?
Something like black box reports?
No.
Logs?
No, it's the Hubble telescope.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, so you haven't got the six.
Oh, thank fuck for that.
Okay, you'll definitely get this one. Question four. How many examples of stock footage from NASA are in the episode?
7.
Wow, well done. You did that well. Okay, question five. Where does the NASA shuttle end up landing on re-entry?
Kirtland, Albuquerque.
Yes, Albuquerque.
Anyone know a good place to eat in Albuquerque?
Where we've been. We drove through Albuquerque, didn't we, when we were on our road trip. So, okay, yeah, well done. Finally, the quote. This is, obviously, if you get the who said it and what scene, even better. So, here we go. Didn't you want to get his autograph?
That was Scully to Mulder.
Yep.
After they left Belt's office.
Well done, yeah, because he's all fanboying over it. And she comes out with a little quip. Well done. You have actually, you haven't got the full marks, but you have broken the record so far. Because you got 5 out of 6, and nobody's got 5 out of 6 yet. So, a dubious honour. Oh, well. Well done. Maybe.
Someone had to answer these questions, I suppose.
Yeah, you now officially know more about space than anyone else. And that's, you know, that's quite... Not in terms of the orbiting astral plane, but this episode, I feel for you. Never mind. Somebody had to do it. So, yeah, that brings us to the end of this episode, looking at space. Hopefully you have had more time listening to this than you did watching the episode. So, yeah, just to advise people to listen to this and not bother. Thanks, Matt, for joining me for a second go on the X-Cast.
I hate you. I hate you so much.
You got ice last week. Shut up. Yes. Stop moaning. hopefully we'll see you again on the X-Cast in season two, and you'll be back to have another join us and see where your journey's got to by that point. You should be well ahead by then.
Hopefully, yes.
Yeah, but until then, where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me and my websites through Facebook, Twitter, and the interwebs. The Bottle Episode, which is www.bottleepisode.co.uk. I am on Facebook and Twitter with the username The Bottle Ep, and my personal account is X and Matt, which is a private account, but if you're really nice, I might let you look.
Oh, I might let you look. That is very seductive. I might let you look. Yeah, definitely. Check The Bottle Episode out. It's a great website full of lots of really interesting TV stuff. So, you know, do give it a look. You can find us, as usual, at the X underscore cast on Twitter, on Facebook at the XCast, and on email at the xfcast@gmail.com. Do give us some feedback on the X-Files and these episodes and what you think. If you can subscribe to us on iTunes, that'd be lovely as well. That always helps us. And we're part of the Black Hole Media Podcast Network at Black Hole Media on Twitter. And on Facebook, we've got a nice little group, Black Hole Media group now, which you can get involved with, chatter about not just the X-Files, but movies, TV, all kinds of stuff. So, yeah, come and get involved. And one big last thank you, Matt, for joining us.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure.
And, no, it's been fun. And if only because I now have the very hilarious image of Congress in 1993 just sitting there dipping naan bread into korma, moaning about their lack of rice. Well, which might make any bad episode of The X-Files a lot better.
Yeah, just think of that when you're watching this, or Shapes, or any of the others that are terrible.
That the main thing that's happening is that Congress is hungry and they want some bit of carbohydrates with their sauce and meat.
But yeah, we'll be back soon with the next episode, Fallen Angel, and I'll be joined by Andrew Brooker, who'll be back for that one. And until then, just remember, trust no one.